Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and blessings. Blessings and greetings, blessed souls. This is Dunzel Sir Woodman. And we're live because we want to thrive in Torah Chaim, eternal instructions of life. Torah Chesed, internal instructions of kindness. And Torah Rachamim, and eternal instructions of mercies. This is Soul Class number 3. Soul, actually is an acronym. The S stands for 7. The O stands for oldest or original. U stands for universal. And L stands for laws. Tonight's class, which is taking place now on the 29th day of the Hebrew month of Menachem Av, where surely the Father of all creation shall comfort the children of man, is taking place again on the 29th month of Menachem Av in the Hebrew calendar, 5,770 years into creation, corresponding to August 8th, 2010. Now, blessed souls, we go back in time into the book of Genesis. There was a mistake that was made by the early peoples of creation. Now, the early peoples of creation were all known as Bnei Adam, the children of Adam, the children of the original man and his wife Chava, as we say in English, Adam and Eve. And the great Israelite scholar and sage, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, discussed this issue about that generation where mankind made a great mistake. And you can read about it in great detail in a book which has been translated into English called Mishnah Torah, Hilchot Avodat Chochovim. The laws of the service of stars are literally referring to the laws of idolatry. Not that we should practice idolatry, blessed souls, but how to recognize it in its primal forms thousands of years ago. So hopefully we'll be empowered to avoid modern idolatries. And these matters are addressed in a seminal book by Rabbi Moshe Weiner, called The Divine Code, which you can purchase at any Judaica store or order through any Judaica store, I would imagine. Or you can buy it online by going to www.asknoah.org. Also, to get the inner dimensions of these teachings, one can go to www.inner.org, which is a website which was created by the well-known Kabbalistic and Hasidic scholar known as Rav Yitzhak Ginsburg. As well, if one wants to learn about what was the antidote that was revealed by one blessed descendant of Noah and Shem, one can go to a website which is administered by and started by Rabbi Yossi Markel by going to www.thewellsprings.org. And there you can learn beautiful teaching about the process, what is known as is bonenus, meditation, inner understanding, also known as iyun, from the Talmudic language. It's all the same thing. So let's go now, blessed souls, into a teaching by Rambam Maimonides, where he mentions again, mankind made a great mistake. And the mistake was not just made by the common people, blessed souls. The mistake was made by even the wise men of that generation. That was the generation of Enosh, or Enosh, you would say in English. What was the mistake those blessed souls made? And unfortunately, those blessed souls made a big mistake, so that we should learn thousands of years later, blessed souls, to avoid their mistake. They conceived that since the Almighty created the stars and the spheres, the atmospheres which to control the world, He placed them in a very high place in the creation and treated them therefore with an honor, making them like servants that would, you know, minister unto the great king. Of course, the Most High is the king of all kings. So therefore, the ministers who serve the king of all kings, it would seem to be fitting, or it seemed to be fitting in their eyes, that they in fact should be praised and glorified, meaning the sun, the moon, and the stars, to be treated with honor. And the people of those generations and the generation of Enosh consider this to be the will of the Most High, that they should magnify and honor those whom He honored, meaning the sun, the moon, and the stars. Just as any flesh and blood king would desire that servants that stand before him and serve him should be honored. For if someone were to disrespect a servant before the servant's king, in effect, that is disrespecting the king who commands the servant. So what happened, blessed souls, is they started to build places of worship to stars and offered sacrifices to them. And this is also mentioned and alluded to, which you see in the Hebrew, and it's translated into the English in chapter 4, verse 26, in the book of Genesis, where Rashi, the seminal disseminator of the oral tradition of Israel, renders the verse in chapter 4, verse 26 in Genesis, quote, "It was then that they called profanely upon the name of the Most High," meaning they were blaspheming the Most High with the service of idolatry. And there in those ancient centers of worship, they would praise and glorify the sun, the moon, and the stars, and prostrate themselves before them, because by doing so, they thought, unfortunately, according to their false comprehension, this was the will of the Most High. So this, in a sense, Rambam continues, blessed souls, is the essence of the beginning of the worship of false deities, idolatry. And that was the rationality of those who worshipped them. And then they got to the point where they devolved even further, where they would say, there is no other creator except that star, or sun, or moon. And the prophet Jeremiah addressed this issue by saying in chapter 10 in the book of Jeremiah, verses 7 and 8, "Who will not fear you, king of the nations? For to you it is fitting among all the wise men of the nations and all of their kingdoms, there is none like you. They have one foolish and senseless notion, and they conceive of their empty teaching as wood." End of quote. Meaning, the Rambam explained it, elucidated on that matter, meaning all that know that you, Most High, are the Creator, yet their foolish error consisted of conceiving of this emptiness as your will to conceive a false means of worship of you. The Rambam continues in the second law. "After many years, there arose false prophets who told the people that the Almighty had told them, serve this star, or all the stars, sacrifice to it, and offer libation, build a center of worship for it, and make an image of it, so all the people, including the women, the children, and the common people, could bow to it. He would inform them of a form that he had conceived and tell them this was the image of the particular star, and claiming that the reason why the image of the particular star looked that way is because that was revealed to him in a prophetic vision. And what happened was, people fell for it, unfortunately, common masses. So they started making images in places of worship, under trees, and tops of mountains, and hills. People would get together, and they would bow to them. And the false prophets would say, this image is the source of benefit or harm. It is appropriate to serve it and to fear it. And their priests would tell them, this service will enable you to multiply and be successful. Do this and this, or do not do this or this. And then other, not just some even lower level than false prophets, deceivers came along, the Rambam continues, and stated that a specific star or atmosphere, sphere, or angel had spoken to them and commanded them, saying, serve me in this honor. And then he would relate a mode of service telling them, do this, do not do this. So these practices started spreading around the world. And people would serve images. It's very strange practices. And the practices, as strange as they were, became even more and more distorted, one more distorted than the other. And they would offer sacrifices to them and bow down to them. And as the years passed on, the Most High's glorious and awesome name was forgotten by the vast majority of the entire population of the human family. It was no longer part of their speech, but thought. And the children of man no longer knew him. Thus all the common people, the women and the children, would know only the image of wood and stone and temples of stone for which they were trained from their childhood to bow down and serve, in whose name they swore. And then the wise men of later generations would think that there is no creator other than the stars and the atmospheres of spheres of sake and the semblance of which they made his images. And therefore the Most High was not recognized by anyone in the world, with the exception of a few righteous individuals, for example, Chanoch, Methuselah, and of course Noah, and Noah's son, Shem, and I believe Shem's son or grandson, Eber. Now, into this environmental context was born the mighty descendant of Shem, of Noah, son of Noah, prophet unto the Most High, prince unto the Most High, the patriarch Abraham Avinu, Abraham our father, father of many nations, in a spiritual sense. So how did Abraham extricate himself from the idolatry and the cultural nuances that he was born into, that actually had penetrated into his own family? Well, as a child, Abraham, according to the Talmudic tractate in the Nedarim, chapter 32, side A, it stated that already from the tender age of 3 years old, Abraham Avinu, was 3 years old when he recognized the true creator of the universe. Now that was just sort of his recognition on the childlike level that there is a creator, which today we are blessed, many of us, and hopefully all of us, that our children recognize that there is a creator of the world. So Rambam states, though, in the commentaries, that actually Rambam was actually around 40 years old when he started to get the higher level of awareness as an adult of who really was controlling all the levels of creation. But though he began as a child at the tender age of 3, he started to think constantly, day and night, thinking, how is it possible for a sphere to continue to evolve without someone controlling it? Who's calling, who's causing the spheres, the atmospheres to revolve? Is it possible that an atmosphere or sphere can continue to cause itself to resolve? Revolve? I mean, let's look at it on a simple level, bless your soul. If we had a modern-day basketball, the basketball in and of itself will not bounce. A force has to be acted upon the basketball. Namely, a human being takes the ball in his or her hand, start to bounce it, we see the ball's in motion. But if you place a basketball in a box, or you just place it on the floor, after it has settled down from the initial vibration, contact of the ball touching the floor and then coming to full rest, there's no way, unless we touch it again, will that basketball move. So Abraham was asking, how could something like the spheres, the universe that he perceived, the world that he perceived, and the revolving of the constellations above him, who's making them move? Initially, he did not have a teacher. Now, there's a very interesting point here. There are commentators who write concerning the Rambam's assertion that he had no teacher. There was no one to inform him. So the Rizes and the Kesef Mishnah, commentaries on Rambam's teachings, ask the question, yes, during the time of Abraham, Noah, his son Shem and Ezer, were alive. And they did not try to nullify the worship of idols. And why they didn't instruct Abraham. So there are two explanations given. Number one, they actually were in hiding from the idolaters of their day. They were afraid they would be killed for protesting against all the rampant idolatry of their time. However, there are teachings that, in fact, these righteous men did protest the worship of false gods. Okay? And, however, they did not go out into public. They stayed in their places of study. Also, we should understand that Shem and Ever, the sons of Noah, they lived at that time in the land of Canaan, or Canaan. While Abraham at that time lived in Babylon. There is a question that since Abraham saw that, you know, there was a lot of idolatry in his time. So the question is, why did he not go earlier in his life, from the age of 3 to the age of 40, to visit Shem and Ever? Now there is a book, blessed souls, that mentions that Abraham actually interacted not just with Shem and Ever in his lifetime, but actually did Noah himself. In fact, Noah, who has a numerical value within his name, Noah, a Nun, Hebrew letter Nun has a numerical value of 50, and the Ches has a numerical value of 8, adds up to the sum of 58. Actually, Noah, when he passed away, Abraham, was 58 years old. So Abraham, from the point that he could visit Noah, which is brought down in the Sefer Yasha, the Book of the Just, that Abraham actually spent time with Abraham and learned the instructions that Noah had received from his powers of prophecy, because Noah was a prophet and a righteous man, and that he had received from his grandfather Methuselah, and Methuselah had received those traditions from Hanoch, another righteous man, that Abraham, for sure, had not just his own knowledge, that we're going to explain how did he acquire that knowledge, but he also had the great Noach to teach him. But apparently, it wasn't to the point where Abraham was fully satiated within this knowledge, and therefore he had to go on and internalize further knowledge from his own introspective thinking, his own investigation. And again, being that he was living in, and Rambam continues, in Ur Kazdam, there were foolish idolaters there. And not only that, he had to deal with the reality that his father and his mother were idolatrous worshippers. They worshipped idols. So his heart was constantly exploring and gaining understanding. So we see that Abraham had to deal with the pain of understanding, even from who he descended from, were idolaters, even though his ancestors, Ezer, Shem, and the righteous Noah, were not. So ultimately, the Rambam continues, Abraham appreciated the way of truth and understood the path of righteousness through his comprehension, which was quite accurate. He came to the realization that there was one creator who controlled the sphere, meaning the Most High causes the universe to revolve, that he created everything, and there is no other creator among all the entities. And he understood that the human population of this time had made a great mistake. So he questioned what caused his generation and the generations before him to make such a mistake that they should be so immersed in the service of stars and images, which made them lose any sort of awareness of the truth of the true service unto the Most High. So the Rambam continues that Abraham was 40 years old when he became aware of the Creator. And he recognized and he began to know him. And he began to formulate ideas to create responses for the inhabitants of Ur Kazdim and debate with them, telling them that they were not on the proper path. And therefore, he began a career of actually breaking their idol and began to teach the people that it is fitting to serve only the Creator of the world, and to Him alone it is fitting to bow down, sacrifice, and offer libations, that the people of future generations would recognize him. Conversely, Abraham also taught that it's fitting to destroy and break all the images, lest all the people make a mistake concerning them, that those people thought that there were no other gods besides those images. When he overcame those who debated him on the validity of idolatry, which he proved to be an invalid type of service, he was actually brought before the mighty Nimrod, was basically the first mighty king of the world in terms of large control of population. Although Hanukkah was a mighty king, he was more of an advisor than a ruler, in the sense that Nimrod was actually requesting of people to bow down to him, or bow down to idols, or he would have them killed. And Abraham was saved through a miracle and left for Haran. And from there, he went on he left Ur Kazdim and he went to a place called Haran. And he began to call out in a loud voice to all people, which were all the blessed children of Noah, to inform them that there is only one true creator of the world. And he would go out and call to the people, gathering them in city after city, country after country, until he came to the land of Canaan, which is brought out in Genesis 21:33, where it says, and he called out in the name of the Most High, the Eternal God. When the people would gather around him and ask him about his statement, he would explain to them each one according to their understanding until they turned to the path of truth. Ultimately, thousands and myriads, tens of thousands, gathered around him. And these are the men of the house of Abraham. They actually became his students. So he planted in their hearts this great fundamental principle and wrote texts about it. In fact, it's brought out and we don't know where the book is now, or maybe it's been distilled into other forms of the oral tradition of Israel, that he actually wrote a book of 412 chapters advocating that all peoples stop the worship of false gods. And then when he was blessed with his son Isaac, Isaac taught this to others and turned their hearts to the Most High. And then Isaac's son Jacob became a student of Isaac. And actually Jacob lived to see Abraham for the first 15 years of his life. So Jacob taught others and turned the hearts of all those who gathered around him to the Most High. And he also taught those traditions that he had received from his father Isaac, received it from his father Abraham, who from his own meditation, his own bonenu, had realized there is only one creator. And Jacob, Yaakov, Israel, selected Levi, one of the 12 sons, and appointed him as a leader. He established him as the head of the academy to teach him in the way of the Most High and observe all the commandments up until the time of Abraham that had been commanded. And Jacob, Yaakov commanded Israel. Israel commanded his sons that the leadership should not depart from the descendants of Levi, Levi, so the teachings would not be forgotten. And this concept proceeded and gathered strength among the descendants of Yaakov, Jacob, and those who gathered around them, until they became a nation within the world which knew the Most High. Now, when the Israelites, the Hebrew Israelites, moved into Egypt, they started learning in the ways of the Egyptians, who in fact were idolaters, and began worshiping the stars as they did, with the exception of the tribe of Levi, who clung to the commandments of the patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzhak and Yaakov, Yisrael, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Israel. The tribe of Levi never served false gods. Within a short time, the fundamental principle that Abraham had planted would have been uprooted, and the descendants of Yaakov, Jacob, Israel, Yisrael would have returned to the errors of the world and the crookedness, but because of the Almighty's love for Abraham and his descendants, he was to uphold an oath that he made to Abraham, a patriarch. How did he uphold the oath? He brought forth the mighty Levite prophet, his leader, Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, our teacher, who is considered to our oral tradition and also in the written tradition as the king of all the prophets, the master of all the prophets. And he sent them to redeem the Israelites in Egypt. So after Moses, Moshe, our teacher prophesied, and that Most High then chose Israel as his inheritance for spreading the knowledge of the Most High forever. He crowned them with what we know as the 613 mitzvahs and informed them of the path to serve him and no other, teaching them the judgment prescribed for idol worship and what happens to all who stray after the idols of those times and the idols of all times. Now, in the introduction, description of this class, Blessed Souls, I mentioned that there was a method by which Abraham had used to emancipate himself from the cultural perceptions and deceptions and distortions of what is the true service unto the one true creator of all creation. And that process, blessed souls, is what is known as the act of meditation, which in Hebrew, as I mentioned before, is called idbonenut. It also can be called inner understanding. It also can be called an analytical type of study. Now from here, I'd like to go back to a website that I mentioned to you before, which is called Kabbalah Online. And the website again is www.thewellsprings.org, administrated and originated by Rabbi Yossi Markel. And we want to try to understand that the process by which Avram Avinu, Avram our father, Abraham, and engaged in his bominus was not because he was just a philosophical, intellectual seeker of just knowledge, about practical education, application, excuse me, that actually Abraham, as a prophet to the Most High, was well aware of the fact, as instructed him by the Most High, that to love and fear the Most High, which the Rambam talks about, and the laws of the foundation of the Torah, is generated via the process of meditation, bominos. The Rabbi Markel understands and understood that and continues to understand and teach hundreds, if not thousands, of people this fundamental concept, which was not even the new idea of the second Lubavitcher Rebbe in his epic work, Shaar Yuchud, The Gateway of Unification. This is actually rooted, again, in the teachings of Rambam, when mentioned before, says that how does one get true love and fear of the Most High? By meditating on his great acts. And one becomes small, not in a negative sense, but in a humble sense, to realize what are we in relation to not just the universe, but to the creator of the universe, which is the Most High. In fact, before we get to the teaching, Rabbi Markel has so painstakingly translated into English to make it more accessible for the non-Hebrew reading audience, blessed souls, that the father of the Mittler Rebbe, who wrote the seminal work Shaar Yuchot, The Gate of Unification, the Alter Rebbe, once made a statement that if we look at the earth, what is the earth in relation to the rest of the creation, the universe, the world? It is nothing more inside and dimension in relation to the rest of the universe as a mustard seed. Now, perhaps some of you have seen a mustard seed. I have. I've seen other seeds, how tiny it is. But we know that when a seed is planted into the ground and becomes a tree or a bush, it can produce fruits way beyond the initial size of that one innocent little seed. So too, the process of meditation, which seems to just to be one little seed in relation to the expanse of one's, you know, consciousness at any one point, actually bears fruit way beyond one's current state of consciousness. So the methods, the methodology that Avraham Avinu would have employed in the process of his bominus is discussed by the Mittler Rebbe. Well, the Mittler Rebbe, first of all, starts off by saying that we should start to think about different types of stimulation or excitation or movement within the blessed human mind, heart, and thought process, which are born out of meditation. So the question is, what is meditation? What is this bonus? And once we find out what it is, essentially, what should we be meditating or thinking about deeply? So the Mittler Rebbe continues that the essence of this bonus is to go strongly into the depth of a concept, focusing it on for a long time. So again, we can imagine Abraham, at the age of 40 years old, starting to contemplate on what is making everything go into motion within creation, whether it be on the planet Earth, what is above the planet Earth. And then Abraham would have tried and did successfully understand it clearly with all of its minute details. Remember, he did not have the benefit of a supercharged, you know, telescope, one of these planetary observation centers that we have around the world. What he would have implied is an inner aspect of the faculty of understanding, which is embedded within his blessed soul and is really embedded in all of our souls. And in the Talmud,
in the Talmudic tractate of Sukkah, we're talking about an in-depth, repetitive study or analysis, as opposed to a surface-level mode of study called Girsa. Girsa is a superficial, cursory style of reading or learning, which I kind of call it in a lighthearted way, a reader's digest type of acquisition. So with that being said, blessed souls, since we are looking into the method by which we can go deeper into the meditative process and become more aware of how to love the Most High and to fear Him, we also become aware of the method, which is called Girsa, so we should not formulate conclusions on how to serve Him based on a superficial type of analysis. So what would be three hindrances concerning trying to go into matters deeply about the creation and perhaps making a big mistake about our perception? Well, Girsa implies, according to the Rebbe, one is rushing quickly through the subject matter without restraining oneself or pausing at all to examine the subject very closely. And this is likened to someone who sees something without thinking about it and all of its qualities and all of its precise nuances and not really internalizing the nature of what he's looking at with all of its inner and outer aspects, but rather he looks at it with just a passing glance. So in the span of time, the person is going to forget completely what he saw. So when we're talking about, you know, trying to penetrate into the deepest concepts of the universe, which meditating about the Most High, we want to get verifiable, tangible knowledge. Of course, in Abraham's time, we didn't have the Torah in the form that we have today. We had it in the form of divine instruction that was passed on to him through Noah, and later on when he would interact with Shem and Ever in the land of Canaan. So that's the first negative feature about a cursory, superficial type of learning, which we should not confuse with the more intense inner understanding process called Hisbonos. Then, let's say the person has done some sort of meditation and he actually remembers what he or she meditated upon, but they'll remember something, but they'll only remember what they meditated upon in general terms, because he or she only saw with the passing of the eye of their intellect. And they didn't absorb really what they were seeing at all. The next implication is that if a person tries to understand something only from an initial first superficial glance, eventually a person might come to a very negative type of perception. What was the purpose in the first place of trying to understand that matter? So, you know, we want to try to learn something of depth and profundity according to the Torah. We have to have an approach which is not the approach of Girsa. And of course, Girsa does have its positive points. In fact, it's not criticized to the extent that we shouldn't learn in a more superficial way. Sometimes a person can learn a lot in a superficial way, but that's just basically to get an awareness of something. When one wants to get a more internalized version of a concept one's learning about, in this case, what was very relevant to Avram is that he get a very clear understanding of what is causing what. What is the cause of all causes and what effects? Because he looked into his generation, sad to say, and that people were not looking into the cause of all causes, which is the Most High, Iluko Ilos, Makor Dekulu, the source of all, but rather they were looking at effects and saying that was the cause, meaning the idolatry of their times. So if we go further into the teachings of the Mittler Rebbe, which would be concepts that we can assume that Abraham, the prophet Abraham, would have been aware of, that every concept possesses three general dimensions. The first dimension is the dimension of depth. The second dimension is the dimension of length. And the third dimension is the dimension of width. So when we talk about the width of a concept, we're talking about basically, let's just call it the database with all the details, which is like wide like a river. Not merely saying it just as it is. For instance, like a narrow river. For instance, if we look out into a body of water, we see that there's an accumulation of great moisture, then, namely the water itself. But if we don't dive into the water, blessed souls, we have no idea what type of life is there. If it's an ocean, if there's seaweed, are there little fish, is there coral? You know, we go a little bit further, we get the depths of the ocean that are even above our own height. What type of animal, I should say, aquatic and vegetative life is there? So we have to, when we learn a subject matter, especially when it concerns the Most High, in order to avoid idolatry, we have to become quite knowledgeable of the concept itself and all the details, the database of the subject matter. Here the subject matter is to appreciate and come to love and fear the Most High to the point where one has nothing to do with idolatry. Now the length of the concept, blessed souls, relates to the after one has gathered in all the details of the concept, one is, so to speak, in a sense, simplifying it, that it can be brought down even to the grasp of a small child. Like we see a river can flow for a long distance. I can tell you this, that, I guess it's almost 9 years ago, I took a train from upstate New York that traveled along the path, of those of you aware of the Hudson River on the East Coast, that crosses down from New York City, becomes the Hudson Bay, and eventually it goes out to the Atlantic Ocean. At the beginning of the Hudson River, starts out as a mild little pond. And when it doesn't seem to be much life aside from whatever's in that water. But as you travel southerly on that train track, I guess the MTA train track from northern New York to central New York, the water starts to widen out. And by the time you get to a little north of what is known as the Tappan Zee Bridge, which is about, I guess, 20 miles north of New York City, you see a large, large river. And then when you get to New York City and you pass under the George Washington Bridge, you see waves hitting the shore of the New York City side or the New Jersey side. So that is what is likened, that is how the length of a concept is likened to, but in a more simpler term, is that we start to employ from our after we accumulate sufficient data about a concept, we start to turn to making proverbs and allegories and analogies to simplify it for ourselves and all we can explain it to another person. And then finally, so the depth of the concept relates to basically the essence of the concept. And the essence of any concept in Torah is actually the elokut, the godliness of the matter. Now, this could be understood by the analogy of the mashal, the proverb of, say, the undercurrent of, say, the most essential part of a river, which is the main flow, the water from its source, like the rapids of a river. Many of us have seen video, maybe some of us have actually experienced riding on, say, like the Colorado Rapids. But although a lake or a river can seem like a very calm body of water in relation to like an ocean, if one goes down to the actual essence of the river, not only would we can encounter rapidly moving water, it can actually be dangerous to the person, the undertow, as we would call it. But when we're dealing with the idea of the depth of a concept within Torah based on a meditative process, we're talking about something which paradoxically, although it has no dimension, becomes what is known as the source of dimension. and empowers the database which came out of the concept, and also it empowers the use of allegories. So basically, the depth of a concept, blessed souls, is also known as what's called as the Omek HaMusak, the depth of the understanding. Literally, the depth of what can be grasped. So when one immerses oneself into an understanding and explanation to the point they get to the point of it, that which is not really explained, but they ascertain it, it's from this inner point that one taps into a dimension, which is not really a dimension, that can spread out and form the many explanations which manifest in one's revealed understanding to all sides with a great width encompassing many details. Now, we can understand this in perhaps a couple of ways, blessed souls, but it hopefully this will cause you, blessed souls, to think about these matters which we take for granted. Let's say you have two corner walls. One wall is extending from left to right. Another one is going from right to left. The space where the two walls converge is called the corner wall. Now, if we were to knock down that corner where one wall meets and merges with another wall, we would see that there's this empty space. But yet, that space provides that particular dimension where the two walls can intersect. And both walls going in the opposite direction from the point where they merge. Also, there's the idea of a concept being transmitted from teacher to student. This is also the idea of the depth of a concept. Teacher, so to speak, is master of the concept. Student is initiate, or best novice of the concept, that needs to go to expert or master of the concept because he or she wants to learn about the concept in the process of meditation. So teacher or master, like someone like the Mitla Rebbe, what he or she would do as master, in Mitla Rebbe's case, he's a master, would contract the concept as he estimates will be able to be accessible to the student, so the student can internalize the concept and then open it and go into it again on their own level of meditation, to go into the depth of the concept, to go into the width of the concept, again, all the particularities of the concept, and then to allegorize it and to simplify it for themselves and hopefully bring it down to the level of the child within themselves and the child within oneself, but so the animal soul, the level of the soul, which is involved in more of these voluntary and involuntary functions of the human life experience on the physical plane. So when all these factors transpire, we see that all these processes are actually the means by which Abraham, who is the direct descendant of Noah, Shem, and Eva, how he's able to be empowered by all of these means of analytical skills, of inner understanding, is Bominus, Pnimiyat Bina, Iyun, analytical study, and because he got such a high level of consciousness of how to interact with who is really running the show, as I read in the laws of idol worship, meaning how to avoid idol worship, he was able to challenge the people of his generation, challenge his parents, challenge the mighty Nimrod, challenge the people of Canaan, challenge the people of Haran, until the point he was recognized as a Nasi Elohim, he was a prince unto the Most High. So we see, blessed souls, that the process of his Bominus, meditation, was what empowered this man who lived over 3,000 years ago, who was not an Israelite, in a sense, is primordial Israelite, a primordial Jew, is what's brought out in the teachings of Kabbalah, the Meditations for the Nations of Rabbi Yitzhak Ginsburg. So I'd like to close out with on a teaching from Rabbi Ginsburg, which you can learn more about by going to his website called inner.org. And there, Rav Ginsburg relates that the Most High created the world with Lashon HaKodesh, which is discussed in this Hebrew work called Sefer Yetzirah, literally the Book of Formation, which is considered to be the very first Kabbalistic text within the creation. And there's a process in mentioning that there are gates of awareness that have always been accessible to the nation of Israel, and even before the nation of Israel, the nation of Israel from the time of Abraham, and former primordial Israel. Okay, this book was then transmitted throughout the generations, and then finally put into its final form of revelation during the Second Temple period, which was attributed to Rabbi Akiva, a revealer of Kabbalistic wisdom in that period, and also the teacher of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is attributed to the seminal work, the Zohar, the Book of Light, the Book of Shining, which is considered, in my own humble opinion, to be the Book of Revelation for the nation of Israel. Now, that being said, when we go to Abraham, okay, that Abraham is the father of all people of faith. Because it says that in the week's parsha that Abraham had faith in the Most High. And that's mentioned in Genesis 15, verse 6. But he wasn't satisfied just having faith in the Most High. He had the simple faith to transmit that understanding to other people. And one of his, if not his most, his primary student was actually his servant, Eliezer. Literally, his name broken down, Eliezer, means, you know, the Most High is in fact my help. That being said, let's be told that Abraham was able to educate Eliezer and assist him elevate himself is a source of the Oral Torah in its earlier, more pristine forms. So, because we do know, blessed souls, that the seal, the chatum, of the Most High is truth. But there's two types of seals. There's one that's embossed, and there's one that's engraved. The one that's embossed is the one, the seal of the Almighty, which represents the written Torah that most people associate with the Torah. And most of the world calls it the Old Testament. We Jews will call the Old Testament actually the Old, the Present, and the Future Testament, which is eternal. And it was created in such a way that is perceived as a heavenly teaching that came to inform the earth. And Ginsberg asserts that the more the written Torah descends into the consciousness of the human race, the more it invites its reverse. The engraved seal of the Torah of Israel is Oral Torah. In order to fashion the yoke of heaven as one's guidance in this world, there has to be the development of the understandings or interpretations according to the traditions of what the Torah really is and not imagined to be. So in a sense, the Oral Torah has an impact in many instances. And the aspect of Torah that descends from above to actually guide not only the children of Israel, but the blessed children of Noah with the seven Noahide commandments. And if you want to learn more about this blessed soul, you can go to the website of Ginsberg, where he goes into great detail about these matters and other matters, and you can write him questions that I am not privy to understand and answer. But I do know that Rav Ginsberg is certainly one, or his students who are deeply immersed in his teachings and other teachings of Torah, can certainly come along and answer your questions to the best of their ability. That being said, Blessed Torah, I think we've come to the conclusion of the show. And I want to thank you if you've listened and you haven't listened. Eventually, one day, hopefully you will listen, as all of us will listen, eventually, to the voice of the Most High, calling out to all the blessed human souls of this earth who are empowered because it's embedded in their DNA to reach out to them, to the Most High. Because we have to remember, so 4,114 years ago, the Almighty blessed Noah and his three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, not only to be blessed, but to fill the earth, be fruitful and multiply, and become well aware of each one of us. As a tradition, we should be meditating upon it, sharing with each other, because we care for each other as one human family, whether we be of the children of Israel, children of Noach, but Noach, that we all have what is known as a Tzelem Elokim, a divine image, which beckons to us to act and carry out the attributes of the Most High, which is to be merciful to one another, be kind to one another, to be sharing with one another. So this brings us, you've been playing from Kesar Crown Heights, this 29th day of Menachem Av, surely the Father shall come to comfort the children in peaceful and pleasant manner. Ahavachad, one love, Golelachad, one destiny, Kulana, for all of us, Bedachinom, in a pleasant way, Bedachinom, in a peaceful way, Ba'ofen Nitzchi, in an eternal way, Bebrechas Hashem, with the blessings of the Most High, Akshav, now.